I want to delve a bit deeper now into, we talked about that general relationship, but fundamentally, at the heart of a lot of presentations over the last few days has been the assumption that data will be made available, that data will be made available from broadcaster players or from satellite and cable platforms and so on. Now, I just wanted to ask Antonio, because you mentioned you're investing a lot in building your own in-house data warehouses and systems and so on. From your perspective, and you deal with not just Bar, but a number of JICs, I guess, around Europe and the world, what would you need in order to be able to be giving your data to a JIC or parts of it to be used? And is that something you would consider? And what would be the value return on that in terms of, you know, the benefit to your business?
I think sometimes the value is not clear. And, you know, we are talking, for example, now about privacy, but, for example, for us is way more than privacy. It's a lot of perception, for example. Our business model is a subscription business model. So if doing anything external, and we had a few examples, so Telenet and, announced their addressable advertising plans in Belgium a few weeks ago, and a lot of public reaction to those announcements in terms of, you know, they're using my data and so on. So even from a perception point of view, if doing anything externally with this data would put any sort of risk in our core business, we wouldn't do that. Right? We would not do anything in that space. So there's many considerations, and sometimes clearly from a business model, potentially participating in some of these initiatives is probably more harmful than helpful for us. Although, you know, like I said in the beginning, we look at it from a positive perspective in terms of, you know, we are part of the TV industry, and therefore we want to participate where we can, and we will try to do so in a positive way. You know, we touched on, there's many levels. I think clearly there's the perception that some of the data owners will stop doing what they're doing and giving data. I don't think that's going to happen. You know, what Channel 4 is doing, in, for example, with their player data, investing a lot of money in terms of resources, in terms of their platform, they will still continue to do what they are doing. They will may participate in other initiatives, but they'll continue what they are doing. Facebook will continue. We will do what we have to do. But I think there will be some participation. But I think there's different levels. So for example, you know, when we think about, when we were talking about before, you know, for example, using large volumes of data where you can overlay third-party data sets and first-party data sets and so on. So perhaps that is something that we will want to do, and maybe that's something that is not so much as part of, I guess, an industry committee, but certainly the idea of contributing data, and maybe it's not the whole data set, right? Maybe it's a fraction, but if that doesn't really cause us any harm, but it helps the overall industry, I think we are absolutely open to do that.
So I'm not trying to do speed dating here, but it's interesting, from Justin's perspective, let's say your suppliers were telling you, we can build you a much enhanced Barb system if we could only get access to Liberty Global's return path data. They don't have advertising, they don't have TV channels, so they haven't got a huge motivation necessarily to give it to you. What's your pitch to them? How would you say, give us your data?
I'll take you to a nice restaurant, Antonio. Portuguese wine. I think people know we've done some successful pilot work with Sky, and it's proved all the benefits that you'd expect of putting return path data together with our Barb data. And we're now in conversations with all the platform operators in the UK that we would like to work with. And the challenge, which is inherent in your question, Richard, is that actually each platform operator has a different business model. So it's not a... If you were to put another platform operator in that question, it would be, I'd give you a slightly different answer. And rather than publicly courting Antonio, I'll give you a view on some of the generic benefits that I think are there for the platform operators. The first is that we, as Barb, could help turn your device data into people data. Now, I recognise, particularly in your case, you've got in-house expertise that can do that. But one of the things we're hearing from some platform operators is there's a desire for if these algorithms are applied to return path data, can we have some element of standardization across all the platforms in the industry? So one of the things we can potentially do as a joint industry currency is to help all the platform operators have the same approach to converting device data to people data. The other thing is that we naturally capture viewing in Virgin Media homes, which is not through the Virgin Media platform. Last time I looked, it was about 10% of television viewing, that's live and time shift up to 28 days, is not through the cable platform. People are either on a secondary set which doesn't have a cable box, or on the main set but coming out of the cable environment. So we're able to provide insight above and beyond what people are doing on TV screens in your customers' homes.
I did say a minute. Oh,
you can see why it took me ages to get married. But the last point I'd make is transparency on dynamic ad insertion. I mean, we can potentially do that in different ways, but to get a really good solution for transparency on dynamic ad insertion requires really good collaboration with the platforms. Sorry, I took too long.
And also getting a representative sampling. Like, the problem we have in the US is we have one operator who's holding out 25% of the country, some of the biggest major cities, and they won't make their data available. They sometimes say that it's the privacy issues, but you, the cynical view is more that it's not in their business interests, and that they don't want to help the local broadcasters, you know, who it would improve the measurement for them. So there's, it gets really tricky. And so actually SIM just put out an RFP. We're reviewing responses to combine smart TV data with set-top box data, because they actually both have strengths and weaknesses and kind of complement each other. And in order for us, what we need to do is get to sort of, it doesn't have to be like the full census of the whole country, but you need something that's close to a nationally representative data set that you can then, you know, use panel data to work with it. But you can't have, like, we have 40% of the data now for the country. You're kind of stuck.
But if it can inform the service, then I guess it's still valuable to consider it as part of the service. I mean, I'm interested in the parallels here between the RPD data that you hold and the data that we hold on our side in terms of potential use cases. And I think one of the important things to do is understand what actually the ask is and what could be done with that data. So if it starts with, give us your data, the answer in most cases is going to be no. It's like, but what does that actually mean? Is it the entirety of your data then sitting in the currency data set? Or is it being used to inform the currency? So like the granularity is helping, but you're not kind of giving away the farm. So in respect to our data, pinging our demographic data anonymously to help fuse together census data sets isn't giving away our data. It's using the data asset that we have in a secure way and a privacy safe way to feed it into the industry currency.
But there are, doing
in the US? That's essentially how our relationship with Nielsen works. I mean, Nick outlined it yesterday. So there are various levels of give us your data, but it needs to be an ongoing discussion about what that actually means and what it could be useful.
And you have the lovely example in Canada here from Numeris, where the CRTC, the equivalent of the regulator for communications, has—I don't want to use the word forced—but has required the operators to give their data to the JIC to determine if it can be an improvement on the currency.
There's an idea for
Justin. I wish we could get something like that. I'm so jealous.
Lobby the government to make it compulsory.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
For the data to be provided. I'm conscious I would like to, I'm aware of time, and I'd like to invite the audience to contribute some questions in a moment. So get thinking. But I've got one last general question before we do that, which is for everyone. But I'd like perhaps Bernard to kick off it, and also perhaps Jane to contribute, because you're in an interesting position, because you are dating Google, if that's what we've agreed on, potentially. Google has recently joined SIM, and obviously we touched on at the start of the conversation this whole issue around metrics for viewing. How granular does the reporting duration need to be? We haven't even talked about issues like viewability, for example, which no one seems to worry about in television, that someone may be watching with a newspaper in front of their face, but clearly is a big issue online. So, Bernard, do you think, can you see prospects for agreeing that common definition of viewing? And then I'll widen it out to the panel.
I think what we agree is that we need a definition, but I'm also sure that we will not find a definition.
Ever.
yeah, it's a wish for the paradise. And until the paradise comes, we have to have workarounds. And the best workaround is average rating. This is the best workaround. And if you look on indicators in an international comparison, you find everywhere average rating. And see, it is really, it is robust. It is robust against the packaging of program and advertising. It doesn't matter if you have a movie with 100 minutes or with 20 minutes. And it is also robust, for example, if you are watching 10 seconds or 20 minutes. Everything is averaging. And I think this is really something like a built-in flexibility. And you have only this built-in flexibility with the average rating. And if you have the average rating, you are able to derive all other indicators. You can derive from average rating or from view watch time. You can always say, I want to say this is a qualified viewer. For example, we in Germany take the case, 60 seconds consecutive viewing is a qualified viewer. You can do it otherwise. For example, for advertising, when we make intermedia comparisons, we have 7 seconds for an ad. It's the same, but see, you can do only so if you have at the beginning the watch time and some common denominator, and the common denominator is the average rating.
Yeah, and you would hope that you would have it all at the second level, so then you could make those decisions, because you don't always have it the same across all platforms. I mean, with viewability, that's just the start, you know, but it's not really kind of the qualifier for the rating measurement.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, perhaps let me say something about granularity. Mm. And I think over 40 years, the Germans always said down to the second, and we are really precise. And this was a viewpoint from a bookkeeper. And perhaps we have to change our opinion a little bit, since, for example, with broadcast, there was no problem with buffering, for example. What does it mean if we have the precise time of a clock? It doesn't mean nothing if you have, let's say, 20 seconds of buffering or so. So I think the question is not about granularity, it's about precision. It's a broader question, and then you can say, what is the precision of my measurement? And if you have defined the precision, then you can say, okay, with a defined precision of measurement, I can deliver a granularity of so and so.
Interesting. Any other thoughts?
On metrics, I think one of the things we are doing, which probably Justin will like, is actually, even for simplicity internally, we decided to do the way we are doing our data systems to actually use a lot of the industry metrics. That really helps us as well in terms of having some sort of continuity across markets and across products and so on. And that doesn't always make everyone happy. So for example, certain product owners will want, for example, reach to be defined in a different way, so they get, you know, better acceptance of products and higher reach and so on. But we are trying it with what we are doing to follow industry metrics, particularly television industry metrics, as closely as we can. Mm-hmm. That was a decision we made, and I think that's helped us initially internally and potentially in terms of what we want to do elsewhere.
To that point, I mean, I think the important thing going forward, particularly in an arena like digital, is to give the granularity of data for clients so that they know what they're being charged for. So if a client believes that they want half of their ad to be seen, 75% of their ad to be seen, that metric needs to be available. If a client wants to pay for the video has entered the screen, that could be paid for. But I think what it comes down to is a measure of absolute reach. So they were reached with any part of the content, how many times they've seen it, and the duration they've seen it for. So they've got the metrics they need to then feed it into their MMM models, feed it into their sales analysis, and try and understand what they're dealing with. Because then they can make a decision that, you know what, I'm not going to pay for an ad if it's only half seen. It's got to be entirely seen. And then they have that understanding, and it's the data's there to be used.
And that's what they don't want to pay for a half of a 30-second ad. You know, like if that was only seen, if only half the ad was seen, you ask an advertiser, they're like, no, why would I pay for, say, have someone seeing half my ad? I create the story arc from beginning to end of the ad. So there's a lot of advertisers that really don't. They don't understand a lot of the technicalities.
It's almost a different type of advertising to the, you know, people who know that they've only got 4 seconds before the YouTube video.
It's TV advertising.
I just have a quick comment on what Alex said. First of all, I agree. In many ways, you know, whoever is buying something, as long as they know exactly what that is, I think that's fine. The only issue comes when you start comparing things that are not comparable, and we see that a lot. When you start comparing metrics across different platforms and vehicles and so on that are not comparable, and that, I think that has been a lot of the confusion where, you know, particularly in the US, you know, there was something with Yahoo some time ago in terms of, I think, NFL. And so that's where some of the issues start coming. But I think Alex is right that in many ways you just provide the data and people define it as they...
Can I add one thing to Jane's comment there about advertisers not being willing to pay for a 30-second spot? You're right, absolutely. Some of them are exactly thinking like that. But I think that's... In terms of the spot itself, where you've got a story arc and then the big reveal at the end of the 30 seconds, that's how people use TV. If you think about a platform like Facebook, where you've got this news feed and like you've got the thumb scrolling down, the ad is going to be shorter. We're talking to clients about how best to engage people and encourage them to keep watching the ad and try and get to 10 seconds, 20 seconds, however long that ad is. But we've been talking to them about getting the product up front, the brand name up front. And
they want to complete. They want what they consider. If they designed a 6-second ad, they want an end. They want it to get to the end. They want a complete of the ad, a complete of the video. If it's a 10-second ad, they want a complete. If it's a 20-second.
So they don't care if someone's seen it for 9 seconds.
Well, what do you do? Pay, you know, they don't really have that concept. You pay a portion of the value of it, you know?
But it then becomes a measure of value, I suppose.
Well, I guess the value is whether it's the viewing or the effect. If a 9-second ad had the same effect as a...
Exactly.
This is metrics. This is
why we're here.
This is why Bernard says it will never be solved. Hopefully we're not that pessimistic. Do you believe it will never be solved, Andrew?
Sorry. Well, I missed a lot of the conversation because the audio is really bad. But however, I think that... I don't think that... necessarily, we will be able to fix a threshold, 2 seconds, 5 seconds, 7 seconds. It really depends on the creativity. Some creativities may work in 2 seconds. Yeah. Most of them won't, probably. It's the client should know, should have the sensibility, or he should have primary research to demonstrate that 2 seconds are enough or not. But it really depends on the creativity. Mm. I don't see a unique threshold that can be fixed. Mm.
Okay, I think we are open for... how long have we got, Mike? We've got time? So, we've got at least two hands, so I'll take the further hand, and it's very dark, so I'm afraid I can't guess who it is, but say who you are.
It's me. Oh, hello, Johan.
That's Johan, then?
Yeah, it's me.
Okay. It's me.
Hi, Richard. There are many observations, but first... I totally agree with Alex that the current jigs, as I said before, are geared towards TV. So if we want to get anything measured on video, we need to find a solution outside the jigs. And to answer your question, who should I talk to? Here I am. because I think in the end, with the changing environment we live in now, the agencies are more proactive in trying to get the proper measurement. And they are closer to the client than anybody else, the advertiser. And they are definitely willing to, and are open to even have different sets. So if we have a special environment for Facebook, as long as it's transparent to us, I mean, representing media agency using the word transparent, then it's fine, as long as we know what we get. And the other observation is advertisers already pay for parts of the ads which are not being aired, because the whole definition of a rating, a GRP, is an average of all the seconds together. And they are normally not only the first second, but it could also be the third second in a 30-second commercial. So already they pay for that, but most advertisers don't have a clue how GRPs are being calculated. But they pay for something they don't get, and they will keep on paying for something they don't get.
That's a good use of a pause there. Most advertisers don't have a clue. Pause. How GRPs... you should do stand-up. Toby Seifert.
Can people hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. I need more of the Hungarian music.
There you go.
Thanks. There was one... I think your comments about the fact that it isn't just video that's on Facebook is interesting, and you can also talk, particularly if you go into Google, into things like engagement measures and ROI measures, which which would be worth asking. But one of the things you said, we can't give away all the proprietary databases. Is that a sort of compromise? And this is really, Alex, for you and Justin, then for others, us to see, because everybody has their own databases. But can you get to a point where you could say, you can have your proprietary database, however, the methodology to those who want to look at it needs to be transparent, and it has to be, in Justin's words, it's got to be capable of independent verification. Because I think the big issue that I see and we hear from, you know, sort of people, is that whole business of feeling, oh, they're selling this to me, they're not letting anybody see it because for privacy, other reasons, competition, whatever reasons they give. But if it could be independent verification, well, is there a possibility, from your point, Justin, of yours, of some kind of agreement being reached?
Well, I'd again simply say, well, we're already doing that with other organisations. So ever since we started collecting census data for viewing through TV player apps, one of the things that actually we had to get in place before we could publish anything is an agreement with all the broadcasters who were putting software code into their apps, which we had to make sure that any personally identifiable information, and we took a very strict definition of PII. We actually took into account potential changes in legislation, not just existing legislation. And we had to get all that in place before we could publish anything. So, again, we have this as a principle already in play for the way that we work. And when a broadcaster has embedded the software code, it then gets independently audited by ABC. ABC makes sure that there's no non-human traffic, there's no traffic from overseas as far as we can tell, and that certain IP addresses are disqualified from the data, those IP addresses being those for the media owners whose apps we're measuring. So we have this in place.
I think in the discussion with Google, we have an agreement that an audit is part of the collaboration, and the audit is not only something like a functional audit, how the measurement works, but also always a possibility to have a continuous audit of all traffic that is day by day or week by week. So I think this is not the point. I think, and if you go to, let's say, television audience measurement, and what a jig does, they have also, I think, the same problem. They do not have one measurement. They have one, three, two, four, five, and they also try to combine it all together, and they are doing something like internal audits. But in principle, it's nothing other.
I mean, I think that's the issue. Has Facebook started audits anywhere in the world? I think people just feel that they haven't heard about that.
We work with companies who have been audited. I mean, the Nielsen Digital Ad Ratings product has been audited, and that uses our data in some form. I mean, I think that there is precedent there, and absolutely we'd have to abide by the JIC structures if we were to work together, and auditing and transparency is part of that. I think it depends on how the data is being used and whether we're happy with the specifics of the data on our side that is being used. But yeah, it's got to be transparent. We're under no illusions. It can't be a black box approach. And we are as open as possible about the work we're doing with our clients and our agencies, whether it's with reach measurement, whether it's sales data, or resonance measurement, whatever it may be. So yeah, we're firm believers in transparency and happy to chat about the work we're doing.
Cool. Do you have any hands raised? If not, I have a very quick final question, specifically just for Justin, because I referenced earlier on a press release that Bar put out today, which is also relevant to this panel, which is refers to a tender process for a boosted Bar panel, and then there are a couple of PDFs, which I confess I didn't have time to read, but I'm not asking you to summarise, but what do you mean by a boosted Bar panel? What's your next step?
Well, calling it the Dovetail Boost panel. Now, when we launched Project Dovetail 4 years ago, many of our customers latched on to the part of the strategy, which was how we would, through using census data and fusing census data with our panel, be able to provide very robust cross-platform, cross-device viewership. But it was always part of the Dovetail strategy that we wouldn't just work with online census data. Return path data from set-top boxes was always part of the strategy. And as I mentioned earlier, we've done some successful tests with Sky, and we're courting, if I may say so, other platform operators. But there are 30% of homes in the UK that only receive television through digital terrestrial television, and we just can't get a clear line of sight on how we might get return path data from what is quite a substantial part of the population. And naturally, our board is saying, we like this, but we can't just strengthen some muscles. We have to try and strengthen the whole of our body. So the concept for the Dovetail Boost panel, and I'm sort of indebted a bit to what's been going on in terms of in Europe, the pioneering work done by Auditel in terms of setting up what they call the super panel. So the Dovetail Boost panel, we envisage, will be additional to the core panel. We're not replacing the core panel. We've asked for tenderers to put forward solutions for low-cost set meters that can go on the TVs, and also we would like to see router meters as part of the solution. So, assuming we can get this all up and running, one of the things we don't know is what it's going to cost us, so we need to get to the point where we can have all the information that we can have a full cost-benefit analysis conversation. We're hoping to be having that conversation about March, April time next year. So we can make a decision. And the idea would be, so in this additional panel, you're not getting the panel members to register individual viewing sessions, although you obviously know the household composition, and you're using the behavioural data by demographic from the core panel to turn this new panel into individual viewing statements. So that's what we're doing.
Cool.
Thank you for giving me a chance to explain that.
Thank you.
I thought it would be better coming from you than from me. Cool. So I'm conscious of time, and we have the excitement building for the Tony Twyman Awards. So what I'm going to do is thank our panel members. It's always a tough ask, I think, to be the last session in what for some people has been a three-day panel, but hopefully their contributions have given you something to walk away with and think about on the flights back home. So if you can thank the panel.